Welcome to The Hotel Buy, brought to you by Beechwood Real Estate Advisors.
Explore the world of Canadian hotel investment with us. Learn about success strategies, discover how to overcome challenges, and hear from industry experts.
Whether you're a seasoned investor or a curious listener, The Hotel Buy is your ultimate guide to the latest trends, strategies, and stories shaping the landscape of hotel investments.
Now let's start the conversation.
Welcome to The Hotel Buy. I'm Sylvia Cutesy.
And I'm Jennifer Galatly. Thank you so much for joining us for today's episode. We have a very special guest, Tony Cohen. As partner and executive vice president, Tony is the driving force behind Crescent Hotels and Resorts growth in Canada. Tony is also president and CEO of Global Edge Investments, a hospitality and lifestyle-based investment company he founded in 1998. Global Edge has a range of investments in the hospitality industry, ranging from restaurants and hotels to online hospitality sites. Tony has launched 45 restaurants throughout Canada. That's incredible. And opened the successful Hotel Le Germain in Toronto in partnership with Group Germain. Global Edge, along with Freed Developments, also opened the phenomenally successful Thompson Toronto Hotel. Tony attended the College of William and Mary in Williamsburg, Virginia, and has previously received the Ontario Hostelry Institute Gold Award for Hotelier of the Year. Thank you so much for joining us today, Tony. We're really excited to have you on the show.
Thank you, Jenny, and welcome, Tony. We're so excited to have you today. You come with such a wealth of information, both from the ownership side, but as well as from the management side. And I'm really excited to get this conversation started. So I'm gonna put you on the spot right away, and I'm gonna ask you for your 11-second your 10-second elevator pitch on the role of a third-party management company in the hotel industry.
Great. Don't start the 11 seconds yet, because I just want to say thank you to be here. It's really a pleasure and honor, and I look forward to our conversation. You can start the clock now. Really, the role is to be the eyes and ears of the owner. Hotel ownership groups who don't want to manage, can't manage, or don't have the bandwidth rely on third-party operators for day-to-day, week-to-week, month-to-month, and year-to-year, everything and anything that has to do with the hotel. So it's all about trust, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And that relationship is, I know, so critical, I can imagine. And just from my background too, just knowing that the piece around trust is absolutely paramount. So if a group is contemplating maybe getting a third party manager, what would you say are, like, you know, the top advantages to somebody stepping into that type of agreement?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think for people who really are looking for someone to well represent them, maybe either because they're publicly traded or they're a REIT and they can't employ people, they can't self-operate, they don't want to deal with the brands, they don't want to deal with the 2 a.m. emails and phone calls. It's really for groups who just don't have the bandwidth, don't want to create the bandwidth, or don't have the know-how to deal with the day-to-day of hotel operations. As you know, a hotel is a very robust business. It's 24/7, it's 365 days of the year. And whether you're running a 10% occupancy or a 95% occupancy, the hotel has to be open. The heat has to be on in the winter. The air has to be on in the summer. People have to be at the front desk. People have to be there to serve, to clean. So it really takes a certain personality, I would say. And sometimes ownership groups just either don't have that personality or quite frankly, don't want that personality.
Right. And I think that's an important piece, because I think maybe sometimes if, you know, you're new to the industry or you're just trying to understand sort of that role, maybe some people think, well, this is really for people who don't understand the business or are new to the industry. And that's not the case. I mean, there's third party, super sophisticated hotel owners around the world that use third party management.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, it's a function of, I always describe the business to people who aren't in it as, we are a perishable commodity business, and our and our product perishes every 24 hours. But regardless of that product perishing every, so meaning you can't sell last night's room tonight and I can't sell tonight's room tomorrow. So the level of, it's not rocket science, but there really is a science to it. So the level of sophistication to ensure that you're maximizing on the revenue on a day-to-day basis while containing costs and still providing service and still making sure your associates are happy, all of those things funnel into the what I would call the ultimate report card for a management company, which is the financial success of our client. But there are a tremendous amount of moving parts. And then when you talk about branded hotels, you also have that brand component. So I would say also the other part of your first question, which is why do owners look for third-party management companies? In a lot of cases, if they are first-time owners, then they're actually not approved to run the brand. So we're a little bit different because we don't own any real estate, and that's by intent and by design. And we're also one of the very few companies who is approved to run every single franchisable hotel brand out there. So I sort of refer to ourselves as brand agnostic, because what we're going to do is we're going to go and we're going to pick the brand that we think will give the best return on investment to our ownership group. And in many cases, when you're in the luxury lifestyle, those ownership groups aren't approved and they couldn't even run the hotel if they wanted to.
Right. Yeah, no, that's an important point to make, because that's going back to your point about just how sophisticated, and you're right. I mean, it's not rocket science, but there is a lot of thought and to really yield manage and revenue manage these properties to the best of anyone's ability it's really understanding that day to day and how to, you know, pull the levers, as we say. And I know those levers are starting to get a bit more tech-based, tech-focused, and, you know, I don't expect you to give away your secret sauce, but can you sort of just give us a little bit of an understanding of, like, how tech in the hospitality industry is really driving that yield management, or how it's benefiting any operator, certainly third-party managers?
Sure. I'll touch on it in two different areas. I'll talk a little bit about the tech, but also talk, it's interesting, as you were speaking, I was thinking about, we've been in business for 23 years, Crescent. And when we started, you had above property, you had sales and marketing. And that sales and marketing was pretty, I wouldn't say it was archaic, but it was fairly basic in terms of how we approached and how we communicated with our clients. That sales and marketing department just within Crescent, and this is not giving up a secret sauce, this is, I think, is a competitive advantage, is now sales, marketing, revenue management, global sales, and digital strategy. So we actually call it our commercial department, because there are all those factors funnel into your ability to get to guests, have a communication with guests, and also have them book and sort of get feedback. But getting back to the tech part, you know, it's interesting that we don't do anything without our phones. Every single thing we do basically is on our phone. And I think the industry, unfortunately, was a little slow to adopt and adapt to new technologies, whether it's how people find you, how they communicate with you, how you communicate with them before, during, and after your stay. So one of the things we have done over the last 7-8 years is invest heavily in tech, not just our ability to communicate with our guests, but also the technology for our ownership group. So for example, we have a business intelligence software that we've invested heavily in that's an online portal for our clients. So they can get a real-time snapshot as to the financial performance of the hotel, day of the week, week of the month, month of the year, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I think you have to look at technology very holistically. And I think one of the challenges historically has been that as you adapt new technologies to better take care of your stakeholders, and your stakeholders aren't just your clients and your guests, they're your associates as well. But one of the things that I think the industry has been sort of slow to do, it's changing, and I hopefully we're leading the charge on this, is it's not like a technology replaces one line item in a P&L or it replaces one body. It touches every aspect of the operation. So I think if you look at it on a little bit more macro level, rather than granular, oh, this person won't have to do as much, I think you'll be a little more successful in embracing technologies and how they can help you better service your constituents and your stakeholders.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. And I mean, we see it in our day-to-day lives. You know, technology touches us in so many aspects. We're almost, just so used to it now, we don't even recognize how much it's sort of changed. But I just, as you were speaking, it just went back to your whole point about trust. I mean, the fact that your stakeholders, your clients have real-time information that they can access at any point. I mean, that is, I think, that touchstone about, you know, how you decide on who you're selecting as your third-party manager.
Well, just on the trust, you know, it's trust and it's alignment. We have a view at Crescent that, and this is, as I said, it was by design that we don't own any real estate. If you are an owner-operator and you own hotels, you operate and you operate on behalf of other clients, it's pretty safe to assume that you're going to put more of your effort and infrastructure into the hotels that you own rather than ones you don't own. So for us, all of our clients are equally important. Not one is ahead of the other because we don't own any real estate. And we know if we don't deliver for our clients, they're going to make a change very quickly. So that does lead into the trust component. And I think the level of sophistication of hotel owners today, as you said, is so much higher and greater now. They're very smart. They know what they're doing. They understand the business ebbs and flows. So it's not about if you hit a bit of a rough patch or the market somehow decreases. It's what are you doing to help our asset in light of these challenges? Mm-hmm. If the market's doing a 60% occupancy, most ownership groups won't expect you to do a 90%, you know, at a rate premium that doesn't exist in the market. But are you getting your share? Are you being aggressive where you can be? Are you looking at things a little bit differently? So that's what our clients want us to know, want to know that we are doing for them.
Right. And that goes, I like that you brought up the alignment piece, because you're right. It's not just trust. Like, you need to be seeing the opportunities and the operation in the same way and have similar goals. So this actually leads well into my question around just key considerations for hotel owners. What should they consider when they're selecting a third party management company?
Yeah, I would say a few things. And I just want to touch on one point because I forgot when we were talking about technology, everything that we do today is data driven. Starting with the owner to maximizing on market segments, et cetera. So I think what we're doing now better than ever is managing data, whether it's coming from our clients, it's coming from the clients being the owners, or coming from the hotel guests. But what are the key considerations? I would say not conflicted in terms of, Are they operating competitive hotels? Do they own assets that'll be competitive? Are they in other verticals of the hospitality industry that could create some kind of a conflict, whether it's intentional or not, or it's sort of an unconscious bias? Unconscious conflict. I think that's very important to the ability for the management company, certainly on the brand side, to, as I said, be somewhat brand agnostic and to pit one brand against another and on a particular asset and try and get the best deal for the owner. And then I would say the last thing is probably, is there transparency? Is there transparency as it relates to what businesses the management company is in, how they charge for their fees? Do they have side businesses where they mark up items? We don't have any of those, but I think if people look at those three items or three areas, if hotel owners look at those three areas, I think they can make very good business decisions for themselves and for their assets. And I think that the last part, and just to add to it, and it sort of sums up the first three, I think operators tend to forget is that these owners have a lot of capital invested. And I always use the analogy, someone will say, oh, it's only $5,000 or it's only 1 point in occupancy or $2 in ADR. And I say, okay, reach into your pocket and you take the hit on that and see how it feels. And I think when managers begin to think like owners, they make better business decisions. And that's really what we strive to do. We look at all of our, because we're above property, we rely heavily on our general managers, and we say you are the CEO of that business. And as you know, with a healthy 300-500 room hotel with multiple food and beverage outlets, that could be a $50, $60, $70, $80 million business on an annual basis. That's not an insignificant business when you think about it. And then when you think even further to that, and this is a really long-winded answer to your short question, I apologize.
No, this is great.
But it's all about return on investment for our ownership groups. And if you start thinking about all those little things that can add up and the savings of $5,000 here or 1% increase in occupancy or a dollar more in ADR, that all flows to the bottom line, and that net increase amount on whatever cap rate in that market could add up to millions and millions and millions of dollars in increased asset value. Right. And for us, that's what it's all about. We like to think we do good work and we make people happy and we employ people, and those are all important things. But we're also not altruists, and without our clients, there is no business.
Yeah. It's so interesting because you're talking about the existing business and operation that is already ongoing and how it's so important to just think about from an owner's standpoint and where you're driving value and how you're going to, you know, improve that bottom line. So just sort of moving along that vein into new builds. So I'm sure there is a ton of value that a third party manager can bring to a group as they're building a brand new hotel. Can you maybe touch a little bit on that?
Sure. New builds don't do it. No. No. So new builds, we have, whether it's a new build or an adaptive reuse or a brand change or just an upgrade in operation, we have an entire business development division. And all they do all day long is underwrite deals. And not just a simple underwriting. We really go into the market to understand what are the local drivers, what type of business do they have on the books? Are they doing a lot of crew business? So in answer to your question about new builds, we'll underwrite a new build. We also have we have a spa division, we have a golf division, we have a restaurant division. So if those hotels have those operations within them, we have experts in those fields, in those areas, who can contribute to that underwriting. So what we do is we basically come up with a business plan and say, if we are fortunate enough to work with you on this deal, this is what we think we could do based on not only our market intelligence, but our intelligence of other markets. And I'd say the last thing is, are you thinking about a brand? Which brand is the best one? Which one is available? What are your goals and objectives in terms of financial return? And how can we make sure we build the model around that? We sort of joke that a lot of companies, they say, okay, here's our management box, fit into it. We sort of build the box around our client, depending on what their goals and objectives are. And it could be a straight line, it could be an angled line, it could be a circular line. It's really about what they're trying to achieve. And then in terms of if they are going with a brand, it's about choosing the right brand and helping them to negotiate a good deal with the brand. We know where the brands will be flexible and where they won't be flexible, so we can help them navigate through that process. So there is, we don't build ourselves, but there is a lot in the financial underwriting, choosing the brand, the layouts, and the flow of the operation. We get heavily involved in there. And then as you get closer and closer to opening, we actually have a whole project management division, which is an a la carte service, which some of our clients have in-house and some they want. So we can procure all of the FF&E and all the OS&E for our clients at market rates.
So I'm hearing these guys need to get you on board way early. Is that
the sooner the better? Because we've been in situations where they get us in a little later, and there should have been an elevator, or maybe there should have been a corridor, or in order to service this food and beverage outlet, we're going to have to we need more hot pots because we have to run up five floors. Just little things like that, but also. You've been in the business for a long time, and if you ask an operator, do they have enough back of house space? There's no hotel in the world that has enough back of house space, according to them. There's no hotel back office that has enough office space, according to them. So it's sort of tempering the needs of the hotel team and the financial returns that those needs play into the client's expectations.
Yeah, there's a funny saying that somebody had said in my previous job, and it was, don't gild the lily. You have to keep all of those things in mind. The more efficient you can be, all that goes back to the bottom line. So having a smart team with you is helpful.
I often think as the industry evolves, I often think of the Henry Ford quote where they said if people had asked me if I had asked people what they wanted, they would have said a faster horse. So I think you're absolutely right. There's that part of it. But I think there's the part that will never change, in my opinion, about this business is it still is a people business. But how you communicate with those people and how the brand proliferation and the design enhances the experience is going to change. So I think it's using the technology, the design, and all those to your advantage while maintaining some fiscal responsibility.
Right, right. So if you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Tony Cohen with Crescent Hotels and Global Edge Investments. And actually, I'd like to move over a little bit. We can talk for hours and, continue on your management experience, but I'd really like to chat a little bit about Global Edge as well. Sure. So you're the founder of Global Edge Investments, and it's a hospitality and lifestyle-based company. So can you tell us a little bit about the properties that you're involved with, that you were involved with? How would you like to, I'll leave it to you, introduce us to Global
Sure.
Edge.
Sure, I can start a little bit from the beginning, and I too can talk for days about this, much to many of my colleagues' dismay and chagrin. But the Global Edge was a single purpose entity when it was founded. And it was, we had met the Germain family from Quebec, who at the time had two hotels in Quebec City, and they had not yet opened the Montreal Germain on the base of President Kennedy. And they were looking to expand to Ontario. And I was very young and naive, and the wonderful thing about you being young and naive is you don't know what you don't know. And I thought, why don't I build a boutique hotel in Toronto? Because they're popping up all over the world. And why not me? Again, nice to be young and naive and not know what you don't know. I was fortunate enough to meet the Germain family. We built the one on Mercer Street, which in and of itself, we started building a week before 9/11. We opened during SARS. Every possible challenge that you could imagine and could not have imagined was thrown at us. And since we're now in our 26th year of business, and in the 26 years since, we've expanded to owning several different hotels across Canada and the U.S. We have developed, we've retrofitted, we've done adaptive reuse, we've done mixed-use projects. We were somewhat fortuitous in selling all our properties before COVID, but that was sort of the ethos. It was a single-purpose entity. It kind of grew from there, and that was 1998. And then in 2001, with a family friend, Michael George, we founded Crescent Hotels and Resorts. So we've tried to look forward and not look back since then.
So do you have goals for Global Edge in the next 12 to 18 months as it relates to hotel ownership, or are you venturing into other pieces of the industry?
Yes, and yes. I'll start with the third yes and work my way backwards. We've gotten into several different, mostly on the tech side, but several different entities, KYC, Zoom and Go. We have about probably a dozen different tech ventures, all related to the hospitality industry. We pushed the boundaries a little bit. We got involved with a tequila company, a consumer packaged goods company, a water company, an adaptogen water company, a sake company. So I'd say maybe we did spread ourselves a little bit too thin. So we're trying to pull back on those. But getting back to the first two yeses, we would love to get back into hotel ownership with our Crescent entity as the operator. We've done it successfully with Crescent a couple of times, but we sold our last asset at the end of 2019. And then obviously we know what happened early 2020. So I just haven't felt that the time is right to jump back in. But I am seeing those sort of muddy waters clearing a little bit, and there might be potential on the horizon. But I'd like to do something with a little bit of platform that I could scale.
Okay, that's interesting. So whether it's a challenge or an opportunity, but where do you see, what is that biggest sort of, we'll call it a challenge from an investment standpoint for hospitality in the next, in the near term, call it 12 months or so?
I think everything. I think we touched on them. I think technology and embracing it and adapting it to a better user experience. For sure, and for certain, staffing, getting the right people in place, being able to pay them a proper wage and also make money. And certainly on new developments, it's just making the numbers pencil. And on the buyer and seller side, and you see this every day, so you would know a lot better than I do, but I would suggest that in the last 3 or 4 years, or even 5 years, the disparity between how a buyer views the value of their asset, the asset that they're looking at, and the seller views the value of their asset is getting wider and wider. And there's a chasm that I'm just concerned that we won't be able to get around and get back to a closer sort of interpretation on values.
Right. Okay. So the bid-ask spread is still just a little too wide there. I'm really interested to get your perspective on the independent design focus. I mean, you really were involved with some of the earliest design focused, we'll call them boutique type properties in Canada. And you're also super involved and heavily involved, I should say, in branded hotels across the country. So from your perspective, you know, which one is sort of more suitable? Is there one more suitable than the other in certain scenarios? What excites you right now in the industry from that standpoint?
I would tell you that the real difference is market and product specific. You know, going independent with a 600 room hotel in a downtown urban center that is heavily conference based may not be the best course of action. But it doesn't mean that in a major urban center, you can't have a 120-room lifestyle hotel right next door that does incredibly well because the demand generators are there already. For my own personal view, I like staying in the independent hotels. I like the way they look. I like the way they feel. I love the personality that you can create around them. And what's interesting, when I started over 20 years ago, and I would argue that the Germain at the time was not a brand. It was a couple of independent hotels. They have built a brand and built a very good one. But it was interesting because we didn't have the internet. We didn't have OTAs. We didn't have the distribution systems and channels and social media that are available today. So I would suggest it's probably easier now for independent lifestyle boutique hotels. And then the second thing is what all the major brands have done, whether it's Marriott or Hilton or Hyatt or Intercontinental, in adopting these soft brands and ensuring that they maintain a high level of independence, but that they're able to plug into the engine. And a lot of these companies, Marriott with Autograph and Tribute and some of the others, have done some studies, and they have found that 50% of their clients in those soft branded scenarios come purely through independent channels, because the guests think that there is no affiliation, and 50% come through Bonvoy or Hilton Honors or Hyatt or one of the other loyalty programs. So it's very interesting how they're able to attract two very different, differently minded travelers into the same asset.
Right. Well, I mean, I've got my favorites too, and I sort of lean to the independent space, but there's exciting. I love what the brands have done with the soft brand space as well.
Give me your favorite independent hotel in Canada and your favorite one in the US.
Oh gosh. Today, right now. Oh, well, I'm going to be biased, but I love what the June Motel, they've done across Ontario. I think they were bold in their approach. They started out with very little and had just an idea, and they've done really, really well. The US. So I stayed at, and this is interesting because they just got acquired by Hilton, but at the Nomad in Vegas. And it was, you didn't even feel like you're in Vegas. It was such a great experience. You know, you walk in through another hotel, it felt bespoke, it felt secret. And I just love that. But there's so many. I mean, like I said, we could probably have another 3-hour conversation.
I caught your interview with the women from June, and what I really like about them, and I think this talks to what I call the McDonald's quotient or the Tim Hortons quotient. I'll explain it, is that having a very myopic, singular focus in terms of, I'm going to offer this type of offering to guests in a particular market. And if I don't want to expand beyond them at some point, I can. But I think too often, hoteliers, restaurateurs, people in hospitality are trying to be all things to all people. And that sort of goes back to your question about, are you more in favor of branded or lifestyle? I think it's very specific to the asset and the demographic, or I'd even argue the psychographic, because it's not an age group, the psychographic that you're trying to cater to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, absolutely. It's not just for one, you know, the young or the old. Like, everyone's, you know, got an opinion and want a great experience. I think that's true for everyone. I just want to finish off, and thank you so much for your time. This has been wonderful. But I think I just wanted to come back sort of full circle and just get your perspective on how. So you've got the ownership lens, you've got the management lens. So what are some important ways owners can support the management company they select to run their property? Like, what, how, I mean, it's a two-way street. So what can they do?
I think that the first thing, and it's going to sound painfully obvious, but is holding them accountable. But holding them accountable in a reasonable way. As I mentioned, if a market is down 30%, an owner expecting you to outperform the market is one thing. To dramatically outperform a market that is in decline is unrealistic. And I think the other, so holding accountable, I think, is very important. I think that works. That definitely works both ways. I think being supportive of good initiatives, and so being supportive. So it's really a function of, I think, where the owners have an expectation, they want a return. But as we know in this business, it's not about if something goes wrong, it's about when and how you react. And in a market that's ever changing, is ensuring that as the management company tries new things to outperform, to ensure financial returns, that ownership is supportive in those endeavors.
Right. And then it goes back to alignment, and then it goes back to trust. So
they sort of weave through the fabric all together.
Absolutely. Amazing. Tony, thank you so much. Honestly, this flew by. I feel like, honestly, we could probably continue this conversation, but for many more minutes, hours. But thank you. Really appreciate it. I think a lot of people have learned a lot. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It was a real treat.
Thanks very much. And thanks for tuning in, everyone.
To learn more about the Hotel Buy and Beechwood Real Estate Advisors, please visit beechwoodadvisory.com. That's BEECHWOOD advisory.com.